Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Luka fans? How about that for a scheduled loss? You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. Lakers get to their hotel room about 5 a.m. in Miami after having played two games in the previous three nights in Houston. LeBron, Luka, Austin, all listed on the injury report is questionable, because you don't get fined if you're listed on the injury report. Gives them the option, right, to play tonight or not. And LeBron's like, well, I'm playing. And that pretty much locks in everybody else. As Austin said afterward, he's like, you can't have the 41-year-old playing. And then you say, no, I'm too tired for that. But the Lakers looked every bit of it that first quarter. They give up, I think, 26 points in the paint in the first quarter. And legs look heavy, 42 points overall, down 13. Very first possession of the second quarter, they turn the ball over in the backcourt and it's a layup. Lakers down 15. Early in that second quarter, there's a timeout, and apparently Reddick goes to the group and says, hey, I know you guys are tired. And LeBron interjects and says, I'm not tired. And Austin's like, I'm not tired either. And then there's this spirit that we've seen throughout this recent stretch, D. And the Lakers get back into the game. They stabilize it with their defense, I thought, and an excellent first half from Luka, especially that close, right? And so Lakers are down by six at halftime. And then the second half, man, Luka Doncic, really throughout that game, was absolutely flaming Bam. As an old Laker fan, like, I like Bam, don't get me wrong, but he needed a little bit of Laker belt after recent shenanigans. Luka was freaking cooking him in switches, on his step backs. And in what ends up being a tight game in the last few minutes, Lakers make a big push in the third quarter, but it's like a 4 or 5 point game with a few minutes left. Luka scores, I think, 16 points in the final 4:32 of that game. And ends up with 60. It's the third time in Luka's career he scores 60 points, D. He becomes the seventh Laker to do that. We are watching one of the great stretches of basketball in NBA history right here. This eight-game stretch that he's on right now, averaging like 41 a game, on great efficiency. On his defense was amazing. He had five steals, another 17 attempts, hit nine threes, D. Talk to me about an all-timer from Luka.
Just an unbelievable performance, honestly, Pete. J.J. Redick afterwards called it a superhero performance, and it's what he did. A reporter asked him, it might have been Dan Wojcicki, said, so you've scored 100 points in the last 23 and a half hours, and you saw Luka sort of like, oh shit, I did.
I guess I did do that.
There's really only so many superlatives that you can throw out there for a player who's performing at the level that he is right now. It's just really just a sight to see. And you don't have to be a Lakers fan. You don't have to be a Luka fan to sit there and just watch a player in his prime be absolutely dominant and do it in a way where the shot making and the shot pass decision making, and he only had like a handful of assists this last game, three assists maybe. I don't have the box score up in front of me, but generally over this streak, his ability to hit the open man and move the ball on to an open teammate, and the way that he's been pushing the pace and getting into spots on the court in order to take advantage of a compromised defense, it's just been expert level offensive basketball. Honestly, I wish I had more to say in terms of flashy language or whatever, but he leaves you dumbfounded as a fan. Like, how is he doing it? He leaves the defense dumbfounded. I was looking at the stats and went 7 for 9 with Bam as the primary defender, 6 for 7 from three, he missed his first two shots against Bam. That means he made seven straight baskets with Bam as the primary defender. Many of them step back or threes where he's creating separation or leveraging a drive and then Bam sort of laying off of him a little bit. And he just killed him and he killed the Heat. And in a game where the Lakers had no business winning that basketball game, they did. And they did it for the exact reason that I closed the pod with yesterday. Sometimes you just got the best player. And when you got the best player and the best player is playing freaking awesome, then the other team, they started to understand it. They started to see it and they started to feel the pressure of, oh no, this is like a problem for us right now. And once Luka turned it on and the game started to turn, Miami tightened. I actually thought too, Pete, that Miami understood the task at hand at the start of the game. They're like, this team slept until they got on the bus, basically. Right. And then they got on the bus and they came to the game and they tried to play a basketball game. We're going to put our foot on their necks very early on and we're going to run. And we're going to be physical and we're going to do everything that you can in order to like second chance points, chasing down long rebound, every possible effort play that you could make. Miami decided we're going to do those things and we're going to bury this team early. And if it wasn't for Luka's shot making and him keeping the team in the game at the beginning, they would have been down 25. Yep. And JJ wouldn't have been saying, I know you're tired. He would have been like talking to his coaches and being like, okay, what's our exit strategy?
Yeah, when do we sit people?
But Luka wasn't having that, Pete. And Miami's also a team that it takes you a little while to get adjusted to what they're doing. But once you do get adjusted to what they're doing, you understand the pace, you understand the pressure offensively that they're trying to put on your defense, and you start to adjust to it and understand what you have to do. And I thought it was a confluence of the Lakers being better prepared to match Miami's speed and how they were attacking, and the Lakers offense led by Luka, but also like LeBron and to a certain degree Austin, but just everyone just sort of chipping in their way saying, nope, we're in this game. We're not going to just hand it away to you. And I thought once the Lakers wrestled control of the game away from them, it was Miami that was on their heels. And it was them who were trying to claw back into the game. And it was Luka with the extendo Inspector Gadget arms that was keeping them at bay and saying, nope, I got something for you. Sorry, Tyler Hero, you're going to make threes or get to the basket right now. Great. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just bury another step back. And it was beautiful to watch.
The constant pressure is really what stands out to me about this game was sort of the pinnacle of that within the streak. But really, this whole 8-game winning streak of which he's been so dominant is he's such a barrage. It's one play after another after another. And then it's a pass to somebody else on some of them, right? Like, but he took 30 shots last night, and that was appropriate. When that happens against switching type of defenses, I want to have a longer conversation in a different pod about this because I was talking yesterday about how DA is the only guy who can do a certain job of just being the largest human being out there for us. He's like the only guy really equipped for that. Luka is our only really real guy that can totally break down a switching coverage, I believe, in the way that makes another team go, we actually can't run this. You know what I mean? And like that, and it's that constant barrage of play after play after play. I don't think his conditioning gets enough credit just from this isn't something that just came along this year and got his body in shape this past offseason and all of that. Like, he's always been a guy that can go play after play after play. And like, there's no rest. There's no let up. There's no ability to catch your breath. And when the team is really kind of down in the dumps defensively, just that ability to keep you within eight with that, even if it's not the prettiest, the last couple of games, he started both games like missing his first few shots. There's a certain warm up to it. It's not like he started off cooking, but that constant barrage, just eventually the other team is buckling under it. And it's been just amazing to see.
There's a demoralizing factor to it too, when a guy just keeps on pressuring, keeps on attacking, keeps making sure that you don't feel any rest. You had talked about the isolation play for the step back that he hit against Jabari Smith at the end of the Rockets game. That was basically the dagger. And you talked about the constant pressure Luka put on him in terms of, no, like, I'm not going to let you recover. you may be in the right position to like slow the first move and then maybe even the counter. But by the time I'm done, the counter to the counter to the counter, you don't have enough for that. And your will or your spirit in terms of defending on this particular possession, even if you have that still, your body's not going to function correctly in order to actually get the stop. I have put you on tilt too far. And I think what we've been seeing from Luka during this stretch is that spread over entire games. It's been over an entire shift that he's in. It's like, oh yeah, you thought it was going to be like this just for a couple of possessions. Nope, it's seven straight minutes of this. It's an entire first quarter of this. And that has a way of, from a defensive perspective, I would imagine, of making you second guess if the thing that you're going to do is actually going to work. Let's go to break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to talk about the conundrum that puts opposing coaches in.
Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
Spo's one of the best adjustment coaches in the entire league. He's built for playoff basketball. I'm not sure there's five other coaches in the league that are better than him. Like Rick Carlisle might be up there just off of the top of my head. But there's an elite level of coaches that I think see where a game is going and can say, well, we're going to change up. And I thought Spo tried this last game. He went to different zone looks. And then within the zones, he was just like, oh, it's a two front zone. Nope, it's a one front zone. We're picking up higher. No, we're dropping down lower. We're bringing up the big. We're doing all kinds of different stuff. He switched. They went to all kinds of different looks. We're going to play conventional here with Khalil Ware. We're going to play two bigs. He went to everything. And Luka beat it all. And there's a certain amount of, well, we don't actually have any more answers for this, or even like problems or challenges to pose. And this is where having a player of this ability, as Lakers fans, we've seen this over the years multiple times, but when you no longer have things to put in front of an opponent, it breaks you not only at the player level, but can break you at the coach level too, Pete.
Yeah, 100%. One of my future goals of the next 10 years or so is to make a basketball game, have it either be a card game or a game on your phone or something like that, but something that you can play sort of that back and forth that you're talking about. And that is when you run out of cards, what you just described. It's like, what do we do here? And that's where you find yourself in the playoffs being like, what if we tried this thing that we didn't do over the course of the entire regular season? Because you kind of run out of cards and run out of options to go to. And so that ability from the perimeter from Luka to put the constant pressure in, I believe so much of it starts with his dribbling ability. And a lot of the step backs, for example, are being set up by a real genuine threat of driving to the basket. I've been cracking up. It happened again yesterday. You know this to be true. I texted you, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago. And I was like, it's the weirdest thing with Luka's layups on the left side of the basket. He never takes just a straight up left-handed layup. He's always sticking his butt out to grift a foul or something or hit me on the arm, but he never just goes straight up for a damn lefty layup. I swear to God, like 90% of the games since then, he's done it.
It's been every game.
And he did it again yesterday.
Mike has been keeping you in check by being lefty layup for Luka right here, Pete.
Yeah, lefty Luka. That's what we're saying. Yeah. But so much of that is the dribble, right? It's like, or like that play against KD where he kept his dribble alive and eventually broke KD down. That's part of the pressure too, right? And so I actually think that's super essential with Luka. And can be something that's frowned upon, that style of basketball, the dribble, dribble, dribble type of style. But I think that so much opens up off of his ability to do that, that he wasn't doing this at the end of last year in one-on-one scenarios. He was very good, don't get me wrong. But this is I mean, I don't expect him to play this level for the entirety of the rest of the year. And if he does, we might win the championship. But even if it's relatively close, like, he can do this and put this level of pressure off of the dribble in ways that I think resolves a whole bunch of offensive problems for the Lakers.
The Lakers are an elite two-point shooting team. I think they're the best two-point shooting team in the league, basically. And a lot of that is their ability to hit mid-range shots with players like Rui and Luka, non-restricted area paint twos or mid-range twos. They're exceptionally good at these exact shots. LeBron hit a couple of beauty fadeaways in this game. And many of their top players have this exact thing in their bag. But Genie, our producer Genie, sent us this amazing stat where three Lakers are in the top 10 of scoring at the basket in terms of field goal percentage, and Luka's number one. Not overall, but the best Laker at that. He's shooting like 80% or something crazy. And then beyond that, it's Ayton and Jackson. Ayton less so, but Jackson dunks a lot. Ayton does too. Ayton's got more finishing chops to him around the basket. But Luka's ability to get all the way to the basket and score is critical for his offensive success. But the fact that he's so good at it then makes it so, well, the step back three is going to be there. And Pete, he's taken 17 threes in back-to-back games. He made 7 in the second Rockets game, and he made 9 against the Heat. I looked this up last night on Basketball Reference's stat head tool. Luka joined Steph Curry and James Harden as the only other players in the history of the league that have had 2 consecutive games where they've taken 17 threes and made at least 7. Harden's done it once, and Steph has done it twice.
Man.
In one of the times that Steph did it, it was 3 straight games. So in the entire history of the three-point line existing, it's Steph Curry, James Harden, and Luka in these past 2 games where he's taken this volume of threes and knocked down this many. If he couldn't sell the drive or sell the mid-range or play and pick and roll at the level that he is, these threes would not be there for him. But the fact that he can opens up this whole other world. And the fact that they're falling, it literally makes him unguardable, Pete.
It does. There was a point where Bam had gotten tired of having jumpers dotted in his eye. There were like 2 or 3 in a row where he was like, damn it, I'm going to close out hard on that step back. And Luka faked the step back and did that little stop-start move that he does. And that was one of the lefty layups, right, that he got all the way to the rim on. And if you've got a big who's already disadvantaged defending the perimeter, biting on a fake toward the perimeter, the rest of your defense isn't built to guard that on the back line. It's either going to be a layup for him or that corner cut for the dunk that we saw to Rui and LeBron the other night.
This is what I'm saying, though, about running out of answers. Pete, if I were to tell you, pick out a big man in the league and say, I want him to go out on the perimeter and defend, Wemby would be near or at the top of that list just because of his incredible length and his ability to lay off. AD, we're fond of AD and his ability to be out on switches. Bam would be right there. He would be one of the top 2 or 3 guys that I would say, no, Bam's not disadvantaged on the perimeter. He's an awesome defensive player on the perimeter as a big man. And it's one of the reasons why Miami is consistently in or around the top 10 defensively. It's because he can switch effectively and play all of these different coverages.
You were talking about Spoelstra being a coach that cycles through different coverages. You can't do that without your big having versatility. That's the main position that determines how many different type of coverages you can run.
And so for Luka to say, yeah, guess what? You, one of the players that if you gave anyone a choice to say what big man would you want switching out onto a guard, he would be one of the first 2 or 3 names mentioned for sure. Nope, I'm giving this dude hell. 7 straight baskets, 6 out of 7 threes, you know, basically just terrorizing him. And he's one of the best defensive players in the league. And so the idea of, well, if he can't do it, then what the hell are we actually dealing with here? Now, I get there's going to be perimeter players that are going to be able to give Luka problems. They're guys who refuse to be screened. They've got physicality. They've got athleticism. We've seen Luka run into the Lu Dorts and Stephen Castles, and Jaylen Brown has given him problems over the years. These guys are all elite at what they do too. Luka's not going to solve every problem to the degree that he's been solving it during this stretch. But my goodness, man, he is on a generational run right now. And I just think the best thing that we could do is actually just sit back and say, wow,
unbelievable.
Look at you. You're awesome. I'm just going to appreciate this and watch and cheer and type in all caps and send out texts with exclamation points and crazy emojis, because there's really no other thing to do but just revel in the fact that this dude's awesome and he's been proving it over and over and over again.
It's so important to be able to appreciate things in the moment as they're happening. I think that we can have a hard time doing that, and it always has to be a comparison to something in the past, or, oh, was this better or that? And it always gets sort of pointed in a certain direction, where like Luka's on a run right now that's just inspiring a lot of awe. That it's been just such a treat to watch so many individuals that challenge the limits of what's possible and what isn't in the sport, and challenges that convention of like, no, you can't do that. It's like, actually, there's always somebody there to push that limit.
And his teammates see it. And they want it for him. And they're cheering for him. Luka got asked about it after the game. And he's like, you know, like, it warms my heart to see these guys cheering me on for my 60th point. And the chemistry, the vibes are great. Luka got that breakaway layup. And then did you see the still photo of LeBron pinching his nose?
For not dunking?
Like, I don't want it, right? Like, boo, and they're booing him. And he's looking back and he's laughing. And they're enjoying this.
Yeah.
Winning is great. And obviously, he could score 60 and they lose and it would all be dampened, right? And so obviously, winning's the most important thing. And when you win 8 straight and this guy is this awesome, it's this compounding effect that it has on everyone, right? The vibes go through the roof. But my goodness, his teammates just celebrating the idea that he's awesome and he's on our team. I told you there was a possession against the Rockets. It might have been the first step back before LeBron had gotten back into the game in the second Rockets game. And Luka hits that first step back after, like, he did that sort of reverse pivot and then step back, and then he drained that three.
He shed a man on that.
I was watching the NBC feed, whichever was the national feed. And the look on LeBron's face, Spectrum had a different feed, and so the background view wasn't LeBron's face, but for the national broadcast, the look on LeBron's face was like, this MF-er. My goodness, look at this dude.
Yeah.
And you could tell that's the version of Luka that LeBron over all of these years had said, that's my favorite guy.
Yeah.
He reminds me of me in all of these ways. He plays the right way, but he's just awesome. So let's go to break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to talk about the tie-in to LeBron and this bigger idea of belief.
Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
I saw someone talking about this on TV. It might have been Windhorse again. And Windhorse is a great person for this specific idea because he's followed LeBron for so long. And Windhorse talked about how LeBron believes in this group. And you can just tell. He's like, you know, you're not going to see it in box score stats. You're not going to see it in numbers. You're not going to see it in production. But he's like, you know it when you see it. And I knew exactly what Windhorse was talking about after watching LeBron for almost a decade now as a member of the Lakers. He's got that look in his eye. And you could tell that a lot of it is because of the stuff that Luka's doing. And he's like, oh, wait, sure. We got that dude on our team? I'd get to play with that guy? And LeBron's going to have supreme confidence in his own ability. And he knows and he trusts Austin and he's looking around. And you could just see it, Pete. And Luka's at the top of this, but it's filtering out through the rest of the team. And I'd love to get your thoughts on how it's not just what this can do to an opponent, It's what it can do to your own teammates and how it can get them to see something bigger and something to chase based off of having the baddest dude in the world on your team. And this is a concept that we've talked about a ton over the years.
I mean, this is monumental if that's the case. And I certainly agree that LeBron seems to believe in this team. How much of the narrative about this team, big picture, has been around that? Go back to August and where we were talking about this team, and or even prior to the offseason, you know, Rich Paul issuing statements about going to be keeping an eye on what the Lakers do, right? And there's this idea of a foot on LeBron with a foot out the door, that this is the gap year Lakers. We've talked about this a lot. We can't act like this isn't something that's just a monumental shift in what's in the narrative of this season, D, that I think there was always going to be a turn up from LeBron, and that regardless of his level of belief or whether he likes the team or not, LeBron has always been a professional that is ramped up throughout the season, especially as he's gotten older. You know what first gear LeBron looks like, second gear, and he continues to do that throughout the season. Even the year where we were terrible, went 33-49, he was very good on an individual level, was 38-7. Now, you could see he did not believe in that team for obvious reasons, and no one did. But what I'm saying is that LeBron was going to do this to some extent regardless, because that's who LeBron is, right? But I absolutely see the same thing that you do, in that I think LeBron sees that they have the main thing that you need to win a championship, which is one of those guys. I know it's so simplistic, but if you go back through the actual championship winning teams throughout NBA history, you have very few examples of teams that win without like a top three player. You don't even have to get to top five, top seven, anything like that. You go back and it's almost always like that's the best dude in the game or very close to it.
Remember there was that crazy stat where it was like Shaq, Kobe, or Tim Duncan were in the finals like every year for almost two decades.
Yeah.
Starting in like 99, it was like Duncan. Oh, well, nope. Then it's Shaq and Kobe. Then it's Shaq and Kobe. Then it's Shaq and Kobe. Then it's Duncan. And then it's Shaq and Kobe. And then it's LeBron.
And then LeBron goes on his crazy streak, right? Of like eight straight finals. And yeah.
And so, yeah, the idea of, well, no, you need one of those dudes. It is simple. And it's also correct. And so the idea of, oh, no, I recognize this. Many of the years he recognized it by looking in the mirror. Right? Like, oh, yeah, I'm that guy. Right? Like, I'm the guy who is going to lead us. And he did it year after year after year after year. And so the idea of LeBron being someone who is now understanding of what he can do in support of this larger idea and how he fits into the larger puzzle, it's super important, I think, to wherever the Lakers are going to go. Obviously, Luka needs to perform the way that you expect a top two or three player in the world to perform. But one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about LeBron lately is his insane understanding and ability to process exactly what's in front of him in order to then execute on the thing that he knows he needs to do in order to win the game. And what his piece of that puzzle is within the larger framework of his team. And it's been one of the most consistent factors for winning basketball over the two plus decades he's been in the league. It's just like, no, I get it. Even when his teams have stunk, he's gotten it. He's understood what he needs to do to contribute to winning basketball. And again, a lot of times that's been the guy that's been out front. But I saw him in 2020 throw the ball to AD and say, no, go cook.
He's always been somebody who celebrates the successes of others. And I think that that's absolutely what he wants. And I'm delighting in this in part because if anybody's ever deserved somebody to come in at the end of their career and sort of be that dude, you can definitely see that twinkle behind his eye of like, I recognize what this looks like from looking in the mirror. Like you said, that it's just cool to see that from LeBron. I want to pivot this conversation toward defense because I think LeBron is central to this. But part of how I thought they got back in that game, there was a stabilizing effect of Luka being very, very good in the first half. And then he went crazy in the second half. But also, the Lakers' defense is becoming more and more of this organism of its own. Remember back in the 2020 title run, we were one of the main topics was who's going to be the third star or that third guy to kind of consistently step up and rely upon to be productive to accompany LeBron and AD. And what ended up happening is that was kind of distributed amongst a few different players. But what I thought the third star of that team was the Lakers' defense overall. And it was the composite of everybody, of not just the talent that they had, which was phenomenal on that end, but the vibe, the level of communication, which the Lakers are talking just way more than they had been. I'm seeing that grow on this team. Now, it doesn't have the talent defensively that that team did, but it doesn't need to score or need to play that level of defense quite to that degree. But what I'm seeing more and more is that it is a stabilizing force on this team. It's something the Lakers can rely upon to get back into a game and be like, okay, because that's usually how you get back into a game, D. If things aren't going well for you, you're behind 10, 15 points. A lot of those runs start on the defensive end. And so seeing the Lakers coalesce on that end, D, I just wanted to talk about that with you real quick before we hit the weekend.
Top 10 in defense in the last 10 games, which would be expected to a certain degree because they're 9-1 in those 10 games. Top 15, I think they're 12th or 13th in their last 15 games. The defense is coming around for sure. The guys are playing harder, but also playing much smarter on that side of the ball. And this was one of your key arguments that you've been making even when the Lakers were bad on defense. It was the idea of, well, no, what you have are smarts. What you have are brains. What you have is the ability to process and get to the right spot, see it a little bit faster than a different team might or a different player might, and get there and do it. And one of the things that you actually need then in that instance is trust. And this is an idea that we're very familiar with over the years. I remember Andrew Bynum talking about the lack of trust that year when they got swept out of the playoffs by the Mavs. There was that trust issues conversation. And you have to understand that if I do my job, the next guy is going to do his. The guy over there is going to do his. And we're going to cover up for each other. And the in-play communication, the level of that in-play communication has just gone up dramatically in the last month or so, Pete. And it's one of the things that stands out to me most defensively. It's like they're talking at the beginning of plays in terms of matching up. They're talking in the middle of plays in terms of, well, I've got this guy, you drop down here. No, that's your coverage. You rotate over there. There was a play where this actually didn't work out for the Lakers, and it was against Denver, where the Lakers had double-teamed Jokic, and he made this crazy pass from the right wing all the way to the left corner to Tim Hardaway. And in the middle of that action, as Jokic is lifting up to raise up to make the pass, you see Marcus pointing to the corner and telling Luka, Luka, that's you. Yep. I'm recovering here. And Luka dropped down and he sort of gambled and went for the steal instead of just continuing his closeout to get all of the way to the corner. And it was just a perfect pass by Jokic. But what stood out to me was in the middle of this play, Marcus is directing traffic while he's closing out to his man. Luka is then picking up on that and rotating to the corner. And it was really good defense. It just got beat by better offense. And you're not going to win every defensive possession, Pete, but the level of communication and togetherness has just been there.
Marcus, man, I love Marcus Smart. He cannot be playing for a different team next season. They gotta bring him back because of stuff like that, that communication, that you've got all these great ingredients, all these really talented people that talking and coming together is such a key part of that, that Marcus is right near the top of that. What you just described is something he does all the time. One of my favorite exercises to do from a film watching standpoint is just watch one player the whole time. Don't watch the ball, just focus on that one player. If you want a really fun player to just focus on all the time, Marcus Smart. And it's not all just box score type of stuff. It's a lot of communication, a lot of passion, a lot of energy, a lot of making sure that we're on the same page, that I'm just super grateful for him. And LeBron turning it up, like LeBron joining the party in this respect, is just massive for this team, D. There is so much to talk about that we could go for another hour. We will be back probably on Monday. We'll see how fired up our Lakers gets us this weekend. But we'll be back on Monday. Talk more Lakers. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.